Today's episode of the Two-Man Power Trip of Wrestling is dedicated to the life, the memory, and the legacy of a very influential figure in the history of professional wrestling, Mr. Jerry Jarrett.
The upcoming presentation is a Two-Man Power Trip of Wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the Two-Man Power Trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Joining us on the line is a legendary promoter and a legendary booker. He's also a former CWA World Tag Team Champion, as well as a former CWA and USWA and TNA owner. He is, of course, a Memphis and NWA Hall of Famer. He is Jerry Jarrett. Jerry, welcome to Two Man Power Trip, actually for the second time. You haven't been on the show in many years, but this is the second time joining us, so thank you and welcome.
Yes, I appreciate you having me on.
Now, obviously, wanted to talk to you today about a kind of a new venture, a new project that's been in the works, and something you can get available on Roku, which is great and easily accessible and just perfect for a real wrestling fan, and so easy to access, which is great. But that is the Jarrett Parsons Wrestling, TV Wrestling. Can you just tell us a little bit about this new venture you got going on, Jarrett Parsons TV Wrestling?
Well, what we wanted to do is naturally preserve what we think was great wrestling, the classic back in the territory days. And we're trying to make it as entertaining as possible with wraparounds where we tell some circumstances about the matches. In other words, why this happened and that happened. And so that the people not only can watch the classic wrestling, but can kind of get some insight into what was happening at the time. We currently have 15 channels and five or six more in the works right now. Bill Apter is going to join us. We have plans for Jerry Lawler to join us. A couple of independents. We've got a girl wrestling promotion coming on. So our attempt is to keep improving the network.
Very, very cool. I just love kind of the old school flavor you got going on, especially when you can relive some of that Memphis wrestling, which obviously you become very, very famous for. But is that kind of the highlight of JPTV? Is it the Memphis library that's on there?
Well, that's one of them. But, of course, the people in Portland appreciate the Portland wrestling and the people in Continental. And I personally am enjoying The Sheik and Bobo Brazil and Vic the Bruiser and some of those fellas.
They're very, very cool to go back and kind of relive some of the glory days or the golden era, if you will, of pro wrestling. Just, you know, so cool. So when you thought about this and you kind of acquiring footage and this and that, you know, how did this all come about where you said, you know what, I'm going to get this channel and I'm going to put it on Roku. I'm going to make this very easily accessible.
My partner, Dave Parsons, has been a collector of videos, and he's bought some, you know, as much original programming as he can find over the years. And he had a little business where he made DVDs of the classic wrestling. My dream was to have Olympus Star Search. Olympus is a new company I formed. And the idea is that wrestlers are not superstars, are not born backstage at Madison Square Garden or the Mid-South Coliseum. They come from the smoke-filled arenas and Quonset huts and National Guard armories and high school gyms around the country. And they're still going on. And I have seen several talents that if they just had a stage or a platform, they would move on, and Vince McMahon would be after them. Or if we still had TNA, we'd be after them. And I couldn't get anybody, a broadcast partner, to believe in me. So Dave is the one that said, why don't we get our own network? And I said, well, because I don't have 30 or 40 million to put in it. And he said, no, I think the Roku people like us. And he had some preliminary conversations. And one thing led to another, and we are very happy with them. And I think that streaming broadcast is the future of television. Right now, our network is seen all over the world. We get emails from Europe and Germany and Australia, everywhere. So it's a great broadcast partner, and hopefully we will have Olympus Star Search to add to the channel, and it would be current programming. A new show every week.
Looking forward to that. That is cool. And do you update when you have the, you know, let's say Memphis or Portland, the library, do you update and add on more episodes each month,
yeah,
or each week as well?
What our plan was, and we may accelerate it some, is to put 4 new episodes up every month on most of the channels, so that the fans can, you know, get in the habit of watching us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, right now we have 12 or 14 shows in the can. So we're like 3 months ahead.
Pretty great. And like you said, Dave Parsons, Rock Parsons, is acquiring some footage, and obviously you own some footage. Is that kind of, you know, a hard thing to do now with WWE kind of going in there and trying to grasp up all the libraries and, you know, like they've been doing for many, many years, trying to gobble up a lot of the other wrestling libraries that are out there?
Well, you know, they have a tremendous amount of product. And I'm guessing that they just know they can't buy it all. And or maybe they don't want to. They have enough to run their network 24/7.
Yeah, they definitely, I mean, they have so much content on the network. It is crazy. But I love that the Memphis stuff and the Portland stuff, and then, you know, there's some ICW stuff, some IWA stuff. You got Vancouver, you got the Atlantic Grand Prix. I mean, you have so much stuff on there. Like you said, it's going to be impossible for WWE to kind of gobble it all up, but it gives you something different as well.
Yeah, and then our difference is that we add the personal touch of having someone either very knowledgeable about the territory or somebody that was in it. You know, like Rip Rogers wrestled for the Poffos. So Rip was very helpful in giving the background on the various matches that we watched.
See, that's great. And, you know, you throw in, you know, Shane Douglas and Bill Eady, like you said, Bill After maybe coming on board, Jerry Lawler. I mean, that is so cool. Speaking about the Poffos and speaking about ICW, did you ever take any of that feud when ICW was around, and obviously you were the king, so quote-unquote the kings of Memphis, were you ever taking any of that stuff personally that the Poffos were saying, or was that all kind of in business?
No. I realized that it was business. They were trying to carve them out of territory, and they just picked a bad area. And when they folded, Randy Savage called me and said, I just want to tell you that I appreciate that you didn't take it personal, because several people told me that you didn't, and you fought the good fight and kicked our butt, and I just want to tell you that I respect you. And that conversation led to me saying, well, what are you going to do? And you don't know. And Randy came to work for me. And we drew a lot of money with him and Lawler and him and Dundee and him and Dutch. All the people they had. What the fans thought was that they were building a feud for a year. So it really did huge box office. And so I brought Randy and Lanny and Angelo and the Weingroff kid. You know, I brought a lot of their crew to the Tennessee territory. And Randy and I remained personal friends. Excuse me. I admire Randy. Found him to be very honorable and a man of his word. And we were friends until his death.
It is great on your part to keep it professional and see, you know, I can really make money with this guy. I'm not going to take any of that ICW stuff. You know, they were just trying to carve out their territory, you know, try to make the name. So it is great that you're able to plug him in. And obviously, he did so well there. And obviously, the WWF really noticed him there. And that big feud with Jerry Lawler, I mean, just that's just amazing, amazing stuff. And like you said, it did big business for you.
Yes, they sure did.
Now, with Memphis, obviously you were owner, booker, promoter, whatever you want to say. I mean, you did it all for Memphis, and you really built that up. Do you think that without your partnership and friendship with Jerry Lawler, do you think that that territory would ever have been able to basically become what it did?
Well, Jerry was a great talent and contributed greatly. But we were drawing a lot of money, big houses, before Jerry came into the business. And we were really successful. And then when Jerry went out for a period, we flourished then. I really think that a sound, solid business is bigger than any one person. Me included. I think had I met an untimely death, I think Memphis wrestling would have continued.
So many great cast of characters. Like you said, when Jerry got hurt, you kind of plugged in Jimmy Valiant, and Jimmy Valiant was great. And then when Jerry came back, he had a Jimmy Valiant, Jerry Lawler feud. So it's just the booking, you know, your part, you did execute it pretty much perfectly as far as being able to get the great storylines, get the great drama, get the great feud, or really, you know, the fans, get them really behind it. but real key, you were able to continue to make money.
Yes, well, I appreciate that nice compliment. It was a 18-20-hour day job, and that's the reason several times I experienced burnout. Excuse me, and I'm blessed that Jerry Lawler was here to give me a mental break, and I'd go to my home in Florida and recharge my batteries and come back and go at it again.
Now, is that one of those things where you're kind of booking half the year and he is booking the other half? Is that how you guys kind of did it?
No, it had no time factor.
Oh, okay.
I would always book for a year and sometime longer, year and a half. And then I'd usually be gone 3 or 4 months. So, you know, I booked 70 or 80% of the time.
Now, with that booking, Memphis was always known as being a little bit crazier, a little bit more wild, maybe some more street fights, maybe some more realism, maybe some more blood than some other territories. Was that just kind of your creative juices? Was that kind of where those fans wanted to go? You know, how come Memphis was kind of almost ahead of its time, so to speak, in terms of stuff we would see later on down the road?
Well, I was a big wrestling fan. My mother sold tickets from the time I was 3 years old at the weekly matches. And so that put me at the Hippodrome Arena in Nashville. And I kind of grew up there. I sold programs and took up tickets and ushered and did just about every job there is to do. And honestly, there were times when I would get bored. So when I had the opportunity to start writing and booking on my own, one of my goals was to not allow the people to get bored. And the other thing, I remember a conversation with Eddie Graham. Eddie said, "You're going to kill your territory, Jerry." I said, "You know, Eddie, we can have all of the foolishness and nonsense and street brawls and coal miners' love matches and scalpel matches as long as we keep it real. We'll survive and thrive." And, you know, I think a lot of the world caught on to it. My scaffold match went to every territory in the nation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the street brawls and, you know, ECW, I think they got the idea of extreme wrestling from some of the people being in here and participating in our style of wrestling.
No doubt.
The Tupelo concession stand brawl. A lot of people have said, I'm sorry, I've got a cough.
No problem.
A lot of people have said, we were hardcore before hardcore was cool. And that, if you've seen that tape, the one thing that you come away from it, it was wild and crazy, but it was real. And I think that's the secret to our success.
So good. And Memphis, like I said, way ahead of its time. ECW definitely stole some stuff. And obviously Heyman ended up coming through that territory as a young guy. So he definitely got some ideas and some booking habits and, you know, learned some stuff and definitely took it with him as he went on down the road. That's for sure.
Yes. Bill Dundee took our style of wrestling and literally saved Bill Watts' territory.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I gave Bill some talent and sent Bill Dundee as the booker, and they turned it around, and turned it around quickly.
They had some of their best years, and obviously big money, biggest money makers when Bill Dundee was the booker for Bill Watts.
Yes. And Bill Watts repaid me by coming in and running opposition to me in Memphis. Crazy world.
Yep, that's the crazy world of the wrestling business. And, you know, we're talking about different things as far as the gimmicks and different things like that. But the rumors that you always hear is that, you know, in the 70s or whenever it was, but Elvis Presley was rumored to be in the crowds watching those Memphis. So everyone kind of had their eye on Memphis, right, at one point or another at that wrestling
territory? Yeah, he came to the matches two or three times and asked us to keep it quiet and have an area where the fans wouldn't know he was there, and we accommodated him.
That's pretty wild. You know, arguably the biggest star of his era, you know, just this monumental, just huge star, is coming to Memphis wrestling because he loves the matches. Was he that big of a wrestling fan?
Yeah, I guess he was. You know, I apologize. You know, I have met more, I guess you'd call them closet fans, than I have people that have just said, "I love wrestling," over the years. The favorite saying is, "You know, I don't watch wrestling, but I was just going through the channels the other night." And then they'll quote a Lawler or Dundee or Handsome Jimmy Valiant interview word for word. So, I mean, there were a lot of fans back in those days.
Funny, the closet fans is very, very true. They could pretend that they didn't watch or they did not watch him, but they knew a lot about the business. But with Memphis, you know, we're saying Elvis is coming through the territory, so to speak, as a fan. But just think about all those wrestlers that came through that territory and built themselves up and, you know, kind of learned their trade and really took that knowledge from Memphis and took it to either WWF or WCW or wherever. And I always think of Hulk Hogan kind of, you know, starting out going through Memphis and the Ultimate Warrior. And Sting. I mean, these are some of the guys that became the biggest names ever in the history of the business, and they're coming through Memphis. And basically, you kind of saw something in them at a young age, and you said, man, there was something about these guys. So what did you kind of see in the Hogans and the Warriors and the Stings? You're like, man, I got to bring them to Memphis. I got to hone their skills. I'm going to, you know, put them on TV and, you know, try to make some money with these guys.
You know, charisma is like pixie dust. You really can't define it. You can't put it in a bottle. But I think that I'm blessed to be able to spot it. My wife and I would sit and watch American Idol. And the first 7 years they were on, early during the preliminary rounds, I would say, that's your winner. And, you know, it's just maybe it's luck. I don't know, but I saw something in Hogan, much, much more than him just being a big man. He couldn't make an interview. I worked downstairs in my basement hours and hours. My cameramen and sound people would laugh because I'd be posing, and of course I don't look anything like college, but I'd be posing, and where he would, I was behind the camera, and you know, he would mimic it, and ended up getting it down pretty darn good. I carried him to Tupelo, and he was a great athlete, and he about killed me when I was trying to teach him to do the leg drop where it looked effective. And, you know, they were some great times for me when he was in New York and drawing all that money. It was a great feeling of satisfaction.
Man, it's like the ultimate satisfaction. You see something in somebody that maybe somebody that nobody else really sees, and they become something. And obviously, with the Hulkster, you saw something like the charisma, like you said, that undeniable attraction, whatever it is with the Hulkster. And he, you know, became the biggest star ever in the history of the wrestling business. It's pretty crazy that he starts with you, you help train him along. And like you said, it's definitely satisfaction. You know, does that kind of make you aspire, like, all right, I got to find the next guy, the next guy after that? Is that how, you know, you kept hunting it down? Did you, like you said, or is it almost just a little bit of luck involved as well?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you see, that's why I really want to do Olympus Star Search, because I think there's a lot of talent out there. Vince seems to be having some hard times right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think it correlates to there not being a territory system anymore, and you can't go out and pluck experienced talent. And, you know, I've always contended that it was very, very difficult, if not impossible, to create a superstar in a wrestling school. You learn the fundamentals there, but until somebody teaches you to project your personality, make a believable interview, believe in yourself. My contribution to so many of the wrestlers was in conversation and not in the gym. You know, one, Jimmy Hart comes to mind, Jimmy Cornette comes to mind. You know, I would tell the people, don't try to be somebody else. Be yourself. God made you unique, and the only way you're ever going to really be a star is when you project your personality. And I believe that, and I believe we could do it again.
Obviously, with Jimmy Hart and Cornette, great examples, because they came through Memphis, young guys, and then they became huge stars in Memphis, and then an even bigger star when they went to WWF, and when Cornette went to JCP and the NWA, and obviously eventually WWF as well. But, I mean, man, think about just those names alone that we've mentioned, Hogan, Warrior, Sting, Jimmy Hart, Cornette, some of the biggest names of all time, and they're coming through Memphis, and you're helping them basically mold their careers. It's pretty astonishing that all these amazing guys came from Memphis.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, you know, there's Flyboy Frazier and Coco Beware, the Birdman, and so many that aren't up there at the super, superstar level. But I'm proud of every one of them. And every time somebody would leave me, I would hope they came back a multimillionaire.
And when you think about Memphis, obviously, we mentioned Jerry Lawler, you always think about his feuds. And I think that's one of the first things outside of this amazing list of talent and all these guys coming in and these guys making big names. But I always think about the feud with Jerry Lawler, and I guess the Lawler-Fargo feud kind of set it off and really put Lawler on the map. Is that kind of how you see it as well?
Yes, yes. Jackie Fargo, I watched his matches at the Hippodrome when I was a child. And he was retired in Memphis when I broke in, when I started booking. So I went over there to the restaurant or bar that he was running. I think he owned it. And called the Southern Frontier and said, Jackie, you look great. I wish you'd come back to work in Memphis. You know, I know that on the end of your career, you didn't make a lot of money, but we're headed in the right direction. And I think you can make a lot of money and have a second career in your life. And he did, and he just, it was amazing how Jackie got over, and it didn't take him two matches, and he was back full stride. And, you know, he had a great second career. And then he passed the torch to Lawler. And, of course, that kick-started Lawler's career and made it a whole lot easier for him to become our star.
Love how that happens, the passing of the torch. And I love how Lawler really excelled. I mean, he really became a top guy. He really became the territory, so to speak, as far as that the great main eventer. Could always draw money. Could put him in there with anybody. He's always going to have a good match. And I just love that Andy Kaufman gets plucked from Hollywood. And he wants to be in the wrestling business. He, you know, Andy Kaufman loved pro wrestling. It just kind of fit him like a glove that he'd be such a good heel. But I love that he ended up feuding with Jerry Lawler in Memphis. Did you kind of feel the same way? Did you think that, man, this is going to be great? And not only that, it's going to catch a lot of mainstream eyeballs.
No, I really didn't. When Andy called me, he was such a nice guy. And he said, I love wrestling, and I've incorporated it into my stand-up comedy routine, but I would just give anything to be able to be in a real wrestling match. And he said, I have crowned myself the intergender champion of the world. And he said, I wrestle in my nightclub act, and it's a shoot. I really think I can beat every woman. And I said, well, Andy, you're in for a rude awakening because you can't. And he said, well, you don't have to pay me. I'll come to Memphis and put up my own money as prize money if you'll just let me wrestle. So he did. And Jerry Lawler and I were standing at the back, and a very stout woman was about to clean his plow and collect his $5,000. So Lawler ran down to the ring and interfered and saved Andy's money, and then that led to Andy just picked up on it and made an impromptu interview, and the crowd went wild. So, you know, we kind of stumbled into the Lawler-Andy match because Andy was not a very big guy and certainly wasn't muscular. But the fans reacted so because he'd made them so mad with his interviews, teaching them how to use toilet tissue and toothbrush, you know.
So
saving the Southern Hicks. So, you know, it turned out just great and drew a lot of money. And Andy was so into the business that he would wear a neck brace back to Hollywood and make interviews about Jerry Lawler and how he had pile-drived him. When we did the angle, he went to the hospital, and my intent was for him to go and then check him out and let him go. Well, he stayed 2 days. You know, he told the doctors, I think my neck's broke. So they kept him and did MRIs and x-rays. And he just, you know, he had the wrestling mentality and loved the business so much that he just sold everything all the time in the ring and out.
I just love how he got it. You know, he got the psychology of wrestling. He's going to stay at the hospital not to break kayfabe. He just seemed like the perfect fit for the wrestling world.
Yeah, I'm really surprised that somebody had studied Andy Kaufman tapes and tried to at least mimic his interviews, because they were classic.
He was so good at making you dislike him. Even when he'd do his comic routine, he wanted the crowd to boo him, which was just hilarious. I mean, he just knew how to be a heel, and he knew how to, you know, work the crowd, if you will. And he said, you know, a lot of it apparently he got from watching old school wrestling.
Yeah. You seem to be very knowledgeable about the territories and classic wrestling. And, you're up there in Vince's backyard, right?
That is true. Very, very close.
Are you a WWE fan?
You know, not so much anymore. I haven't really gotten into them so much. I'm kind of more of an old school fan. Like, if I was going to watch wrestling nowadays, I go back to the old stuff and enjoy that. For instance, you know, I might go back and watch, I have a DVD of Jerry Lawler versus Andy Kaufman, or, you know, which is literally the whole feud put together, or I might go back and watch Hogan and Warrior from WrestleMania 6, something just more old school. I was much more of a, more of a wrestling fan than you say than nowadays, where I feel like the psychology is gone and it's much more spots.
The reason it's gone is the talent. You know, if Vince could hatch Stone Cold Steve Austin and do that angle over again, he would. But we broke Stone Cold, we broke Steve Austin in our Dallas wrestling school, and then put him in the ring, brought him to Tennessee, and he got some real good experience, and then he went on to, I think, WCW. But, you know, if you don't have the talent can make the storylines believable, then they come across as scripted. And wrestling's always been scripted. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost too rehearsed, too scripted, too choreographed. It's like they're reading off teleprompters, things like that. And that's not the way it should be. You need, you know, like the Roddy Piper or like the Andy Kaufman's, where it's just kind of, you feel like it's real. Like, wow, you know, I know this is scripted, but you get lost in the moment because these guys really believe in themselves, and they're not scripted. They're being themselves, kind of turned up. So it definitely is lacking in a lot of areas. And like you said, the talent is not what it used to be. There's no more larger-than-life characters.
Yeah, well, for an interview to be great, it has to be ad lib or extemporaneous. Now, the writers can give bullet points or themes and minor direction, but the minute you go to writing out their interview form, then the talent has no expression, so therefore their personality cannot come across. I think that day will come back. I think hopefully I'll be a party to finding some new talent that's like The Rock or Jerry Lawler or Hulk Hogan or, you know, any of the stars that really captured your attention.
With WWF, or WWE, whatever you want to say, with Vince, back in the day with USWA, you were kind of the feeder league, and even so, when that whole steroid scandal happened, you know, Vince held you in pretty high regard. You were supposedly going to be, you know, the president of the WWF. I guess, you know, maybe you lost touch, or how come, you know, maybe he won't kind of go back to the well that seemed to always work and him kind of use you, so to speak, or, you know, try to, you know, you get some info from you and get some, I don't know how to say, you know, get some chutzpah back in the business, get some, you know, get some fire back in the wrestling business.
Well, very few people have quit Vince. And I went up there because of a promise to his dad. And as soon as his trial was over, I started packing my bags to come home because I really missed Tennessee and home. And my guess is for a year or two or three, I don't remember now, it's been so long, Vince would periodically call me to see if I had any interest in coming up there. And, you know, every time I'd tell him, no, Vince, I'm not. At the time, you know, God had really blessed me. And I was in a 107-acre farm with a $14,000 square foot house that I lived in and had my cows and my horses. And, you know, I'd tell Vince, I wouldn't, you know, I don't want to leave here ever again. I did go to WCW and I called Vince and asked him if there's a, you know, if he would get angry if I did. But the deal was I didn't have to go to Atlanta. You know, I could help him from afar. And Vince has never made that kind of offer to me. But, you know, I think that what if I had to tell Vince my idea of what he needs, I would say start your own opposition. Get two or three people and subsidize them so that there's some semblance of the territory again. So wrestlers can wrestle. You know, the kids on these independent circuits, they're lucky if they get two matches a month. Well, when we were running Memphis, we were in two towns a night, 7 days a week. So wrestlers got a lot of experience. And they'd try something, and the fans wouldn't react, so they'd cut that out and try something else.
I feel like they need that territory system just so these guys can just get better, because I feel like just working NXT or just going through the Performance Center isn't quite cutting it, or just taking guys that were big names in the indies and bringing them in, it kind of, I don't know, I feel like that's not really working. These guys don't have the charisma. They don't have the mic skills. They're kind of just all over the place as far as in-ring work. Some of them are good in-ring, but then they lack it. So there's really nobody that has a complete package where they can work and cut promos and be larger than life and have the charisma and have the look.
No, and I think their system of having writers write everything out, it's like putting a muzzle on the wrestlers. I don't think anybody can ever develop their personality. You know, you can't overproduce a wrestler. It has to be extemporaneous. You know, you have to, as a wrestler, you have to be able to listen to the fan and adapt your ring work to their reaction and responses. It is amazing to me when I helped Jeff and we started TNA, see guys get in the ring and rehearse their whole match. And I'd go ask them and I'd say, what do you do if it don't get over? And they'd just shrug their shoulders.
Hmm. that is crazy to kind of think that it is so scripted. There's no room for, you know, what if this doesn't work? What if that doesn't work? You want the crowd obviously to react to the match. I feel like that is totally just a lost art of listening to the crowd and calling it in the ring. It's completely lost.
Yeah, and then you want the fans to be able. You don't concern yourself with when they get home and go to analyzing it, but while they're at the matches, or while they're watching your pay-per-view or TV show, allow the fans to suspend disbelief. Allow them to get into it like a Rocky movie. You know, when Rocky Balboa makes his big comeback, it's exhilaration and people usually stand up and cheer in a movie theater. Now, those people know that it's not a real fight, but they suspend their disbelief while they're watching the movie. That's what good wrestling is.
Yeah, that's 100%. I totally agree. Now, before I kind of forget, I wanted to go back to the WWF and you taking over as president. Was that as close as kind of we think it is, where as far as Vince actually going to jail and you actually about to take over the, you know, the lineage and legacy of the McMahon WWF?
Well, that was the reason I went up. And, you know, a lot of people misunderstood. Yes, I sat in on all the creative meetings with Vince. And but my job was a whole lot more than that. I spent a lot of time with the treasurer of the company. I spent a lot of time with talent relations, and I spent time really learning the business. And, you know, I don't think it would have been the Jerry Jarrett show. I think Vince would have run the WWE from his jail cell. But I would have been the conduit for him.
Pretty great if you think about as far as his thought of you and his respect level for you, that, you know, he handpicked you as the guy, hey, if something happens to me with a steroid scandal, you know, that's not looking good, I may go to jail. Pretty high regard and pretty high respect that Vince McMahon's like, well, you know, Jerry Jarrett, I got to have you in command if something happens.
Well, here's what Vince said. You know, we had hours and hours of phone conversation. And he said, Jerry, I've got some great, great talent here. He said, Pat Patterson, you know, arguably is the best finish man ever been in the business. J.J. Dillon does a great job with talent relations. I've got great people that set up the towns. Kevin Dunn is as good as they come with producing TV. Linda handles the corporate and does a great job. But I don't have anybody that has done all of these jobs. And you have, because you started your business and made it very, very successful. So he said, I just, you know, my job at WWE is oversight. And then, you know, the nuts and bolts, I contribute heavily to the creative. And I don't have anybody that I feel comfortable with will hold things together if this thing turns out bad. And Jerry McDivitt, his attorney, thought things were going to turn out bad. And he told me that. He said, prepare yourself, Jerry. It's hard to beat the United States government.
And then Jerry McDivitt kind of saved Vince's ass, so to speak, and kind of definitely helped him get out of some trouble. And then obviously you didn't want to stay in the overpriced Stamford, Connecticut, or Greenwich, Connecticut, you'd rather spend some time in that huge acre, 14,000 square foot home.
Right. You know, I miss my family. My younger son was playing football and wrestling, and Vince was true to his word. He saw to it that I never missed a Friday night football game. There were times when the connections didn't work out and he'd send me on a private plane. I have nothing but the greatest respect for Vince in those areas.
And if you think about your relationship with Vince a little bit later on, when they do the USWA versus WWF feud, which is just great, if anybody can kind of find that footage, or maybe hopefully Vince doesn't own it, hopefully it could end up on Jared Parsons' TV wrestling, but Vince actually turns heel. That's the origination, if anybody has never seen it, of the heel Mr. McMahon character. It all started down there in Memphis with you.
Yeah. One day we were at Vince's house booking, talking about something. Somebody said something. I forget who it was, but Vince cut him down pretty good. And so after the meeting broke up, I said, because you got to remember, I did not fear for my job, and everybody else up there did. So I could, you know, I could be honest with Vince. And I said, Vince, we are constantly looking for new talent. I said, you are the most natural heel I've ever run across. You ought to get in the ring. And he just laughed, and we went on. And the next day he said, you were serious, wasn't you? I said, yeah. He said, well, what do you have in mind? I said, well, we can get you involved with Jerry down in Memphis, and you can cut interviews and practice, and we're not national TV, so nobody will see it except the Memphis market. We won't even put it on the bicycle tape. And you can practice your heel interviews, and then we can go down there and you can get some in-ring experience. So he said, okay. And he asked me to produce him on his interviews, and I did. We had a lot of fun with it. And he was the most natural heel I've ever seen. Still is.
So good. And if you go back to USWA, he's so good and so funny as a heel. And then if you think about the heel McMahon character that started with Bret Hart in late 97, and then the big feud with Steve Austin in 98 and 99 and so on, think about that character, one of the greatest heels of all times. Everything he does, mannerisms, the facial expressions, the way he talks, the way he acts, the way he moves. He is, I don't know if that's, you know, necessarily really true to Vince, that he's really just, you know, kind of that asshole heel in real life, but he is such a good, believable heel. It is, you're right, it is unbelievable. He is so good at it.
Yeah, well, in general, he's not a heel. You know, he's got a big heart. When I came home, he continued to pay me for a year, and I'd call him every two or three weeks, and I'd say, quit sending these checks. And then he told me, yeah, go to work for Bischoff. He said, they won't listen to anything you say because they think they know it all, and it'll mean Ted Turner will go broke quicker. So he continued paying me while WCW was paying. So no, Vince has got a big heart. But he can be a real smartass. And I saw that side of him. And when he worked that program with Steve Austin, that's why it got over so good.
He was that guy you love to hate, and Austin was, you know, obviously the guy you love to love. It was the perfect marriage with some good chemistry, but Vince did such a good job carrying it on his end as far as being that heel driving force.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
With USWA, did he always kind of envision that as a feeder league? Because so many guys have kind of been in USWA, come through, and then Vince kind of used them on TV, or obviously Jerry Lawler, you know, came from USWA, and he was using him at that time as well. Was that kind of always a signed, sealed, and delivered kind of deal with you guys, or was that one of those handshake-type deals where USWA and WWF were going to work together?
Yeah, handshake. Me and Vince Sr., Vince's daddy, were really, really close. And, you know, it just continued.
As far as later on, obviously, you know, 2005, when Vladimir Kozlov, you had him, I guess, under management control, and you brought him into the WWE. Was that because of your relationship with Vince? You saw this guy, obviously you felt like he could make money in WWE, and obviously you felt like he'd use him. Was that one of those things where you were like, well, you know, Vince, you know, we have this close relationship, I have this guy, I want you to take a look at him first?
No. I was very, very unhappy with Dixie Carter and the whole Carter family because they had told me that they had no designs on promoting. They wanted to be our silent partner. And, of course, the day after we signed the deal, Dixie made it very clear that she wanted to be a female Vince McMahon.
Oh, boy.
And so, yeah, it was terrible. And I was miserable. I think it's why I had my heart attack, the stress. And every time I would try to give Jeff my stock and say, I've just got to get out of here, son, he would pull the divorce card. And, you know, that I had left him when he was a child. And,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't come back to live with me until he was 14. And anyway, so I was between a rock and a hard place. I knew my doctor had told me, Jerry, if it's your wife causing you stress, leave her. If it's your job, quit it. Stress is why I have held your heart in my hand. And so I knew I had to get out. And so I was working with some Russians. Sound like Donald Trump now. They were, you know, some Russian investors. And I had some great times going up to Brighton Beach in New York, meeting with them. And I really think the guy I was dealing with was the Russian mob, but I don't, that's speculation. Anyway, one day he called me and said, I've got a Russian that's the national Sambo champion. He's as big as Hulk Hogan, and he wants to be a professional wrestler. Will you take him into TNA and get him started? And I said, well, let me call Jeff. So I called Jeff, and Jeff said, well, you know, I got to run it by Dixie. And he called back and said, Dixie said no. And I said, well, that puts me between a rock and a hard place with my Russian Jewish people. And I said, do you care if I take him to New York, WWE? And Jeff kind of laughed and said, oh, yeah, Vince really loves you. I said, well, I think he does. So anyway, he said, yeah, if you can. So I called Vince, and Vince said, will you put your stamp on him? And I said, yes. If I have to, I'll come to Stanford and train him myself. So Vince gave him a contract over the telephone.
Wow.
And Vince, I said, when do you want him up there? And he told me, and he said, why don't you come, why don't you bring him? I'd like to see you. I haven't seen you in a long time. So I did, and it dawned on me that, you know, the Carters were money marks, and they didn't know that, you know, this, no publicity is terrible. Bad publicity is better than no publicity.
Right, yes.
So I knew that that would be their attitude. So I went up there, and Vince said, how bad do you want to get out? And I said, real bad. He said, well, stand over here and let me put my arm around you and take a picture, and we'll put it on the internet. And sure enough, Bob Carter called me the next day and said, I can't work with you anymore. I said, oh, I'm really sorry to hear that. Then what really surprised me, Jeff said, Dad, we need some space between us for a while. And I said, are you talking business or personal? And he said, both. I think Jeff was afraid he was going to get fired. And anyway, that separation lasted 5 years and was the really tragic era or period in my life. But anyway, we patched up things, and, you know, he's not TNA and I'm not either. I don't know if they're still in business, but yeah, Vince helped me escape the Carters.
They are still in business technically as Impact Wrestling. Not obviously, Dixie ended up selling it to the Fight Network out of Canada, but they are kind of on life support. They're not really doing that well as far as ratings. They've, you know, completely fallen, completely slipped. They're trying to kind of rebound, but they're struggling quite a bit. So you've got to be honest.
Yeah. Well, you know, I haven't followed them in years.
Were you surprised? Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, were you surprised with Jeff at all as far as kind of him, you know, obviously you guys reconciled, but with him and Vince reconciling and him being in the WWE Hall of Fame?
Well, I am surprised on Vince's part. I really am, because the problems Jeff and Vince had, and I don't want to get into that.
Right.
I didn't think Vince would ever forgive him. But he did. And now, you know, Jeff is an agent and has a little hand in creative, and I think they're getting back together pretty good. You know, Jeff was a great talent for them, the Double J.
Oh, yes. Loved Jeff Jarrett, WB. And a little bit of you know, history lesson as far as our show. About 4.5 years ago when we first started this whole thing, we didn't have anybody as far as interviewing. We had a little bit of a wrestling background, a little bit of sports rep background. We had done zero interviews. And we contacted Jeff, kind of gave him our story and gave him our spiel. And he's like, yeah, I'll give you guys a shot. You know, he's like, somebody's got to give you a shot. So it's pretty crazy to think that our first interview was with a guy that had such prestige in the business. That your son, Jeff, was the first guy ever to give us an interview on this show. So I always kind of just, you know, always I kind of hold him in high regard. And every time I see him at autograph signing stuff, I always remind him. And, you know, I don't know if he really remembers me or not, but he always acts like he does. And he's just very nice about it. So, you know, I always kind of remember Jeff just being a real sweetheart of a guy and very nice and very, you know, very up to, just like you, very up to giving kind of young guys a good break.
Yeah. Jeff has had his fight with his demons, but, you know, I really thought he would beat it, and he has. Because Jeff is maybe the hardest working person I've ever known. I mean, he just works around the clock.
Do you think he possibly got that work ethic from you when you used to work the 18, 20 hours a day putting together and booking Memphis Wrestling?
Well, he certainly knows that how hard it is to be successful. And I think it's not just the wrestling business. I think everybody that, I don't know of anybody that works from 9 to 5 and makes it in starting their own business. I think everybody has to work around the clock.
That is absolutely right, 100%. And as we hit the wind down button, as we start to wind it down, I just got to ask you, because in your career, obviously you were a pro wrestler, but I know you've said before that pro wrestling itself, you didn't really care for wrestling as much as you cared for being creative and writing and booking and promoting and being the owner and the operator. What was your kind of favorite part of the business? Was it the writing aspect? Was it the booking aspect? I know you mentioned a little bit of burnout here and there, but was that kind of your favorite aspect of the
wrestling
business?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I've been a person that took great pleasure in reading. When I was in high school and college, a lot of people would complain about how much the reading was involved, and I always loved it. My library now exceeds 3,000 books, and I've read every page of every one of them.
Wow.
So with that background, being able to write a TV show, an hour and a half live TV every week for 20 years, I couldn't have done it without that background. But also, it was never like work to me. Like when I would take off and go to Florida, my wife would love it. I hated it because, you know, I wanted to get back in the action. But I knew that my mind, you know, I'd sit at the desk and look at a blank paper for 4 hours. So I knew it was time to rest my brain. And, but, you know, I'd recharge my batteries and take my boat out and fish. But I was always glad to get back in the saddle.
Now, as far as booking, and we're talking about favorites and things like that, my personal favorite that you booked down there in Memphis was Jerry Lawler versus Austin Idol. That feud, you sprinkle in some Tommy Rich, you sprinkle in, you know, a little bit of Heyman, a little bit of Bam Bam Bigelow, but mostly it's Idol and Rich versus Lawler, 87. It's basically the feud of the year. I mean, it's just unbelievable. What's your kind of, if you even have maybe one favorite, or you can just name a couple, maybe favorite angles or storylines that you booked?
By the way, the Lawler Idol, all that's on Jared Parsons' television.
Nice.
And
awesome.
No, my favorite match, as I look back over them all, was Jerry Lawler against Jack Briscoe. And, you know, I called that program Quest for the Title. And, you know, it lasted a year. And today, you know, I don't know, programs are, what, last 2 weeks or 3 weeks, but that one lasted 1 year. And turned people away. And Eddie Graham and I stood at the back of the Coliseum because Briscoe worked under Eddie, and Eddie kind of brought him along. You know, we sat back there and both of us, tears running down our face, because it was so emotional that it had all come together and worked. So that's my favorite.
That is awesome, because you really can't get much better than, as far as Jerry Lawler, one of the all-time all-around best, and Jack Briscoe, my God, one of the best pure wrestlers, one of the best technical wrestlers, just great. And as far as JPTV on Roku, I'm definitely going to be looking forward to Idol and Lawler that's on there. That is very, very cool. And your favorite and my favorite both involve Lawler, of course, the King of Memphis himself.
Yes, I was really blessed that I had so many great talents. And where I was really blessed is that I found them first, or I'd probably not have gotten them.
That is true. There's so many. If you just go through Memphis, it's crazy. You know, the Jesse Ventura, who we didn't mention, huge name. Lutez went through Memphis, obviously didn't start there, but mostly kind of towards the latter part of his career went through Memphis. The Fabulous one started in Memphis. You had Dusty went through Memphis at one point. I mean, there's so many different guys that went through Memphis. Is it crazy looking back and thinking, like, oh, my God, like the list of talent that went through Memphis, it's mind-boggling.
Yes, and you know, when you reach the autumn of your life, it's quite fulfilling to be able to look back on the body of your work and say, I did good, and I'm real proud of what we accomplished. And testimony to it is that Memphis Wrestling may very well be today the most popular wrestling of all time.
I don't think there's a doubt about it. There's so much influence from Memphis, and so many people just gravitate towards it. And it's so good. And it's so good. Even now, like I was saying, I was watching Lawler versus Kaufman not that long ago. I feel like still watches it. You know, it doesn't lose its flavor. It doesn't get old or stale. You could still go back and watch it, and it's still good. It's still relatable. And it's just so good. So do you actually have, which if this is possible, do you have any regrets as far as Memphis, or any regrets as far as the wrestling business?
Well, naturally, I regret the 5 years that I didn't have Jeff in my life. I regret cable TV, because everybody says, oh, Vince McMahon put the territories out of business. USA Network offered me the program before they offered it to Vince. And, you know, because of my loyalty to the NWA promoters, I turned it down. But somebody, if Vince hadn't have done it, somebody would have. And cable TV just pulled the curtain back on the territories. And what's ironic is now with streaming television, I think it will, in 10 years, make cable obsolete. And hopefully we're in on the ground floor of wrestling on the streaming network.
When you look back at your career, obviously spanning all the way back to the 60s, I mean, it's just crazy to think, and even before that with your mother in the business, and obviously with Jeff continuing on, I mean, the Jarrett name is so synonymous with the wrestling business. It's crazy. What do you think, when the fans look back and just kind of look at the Jarrett legacy and lineage, what is the stamp? What is the lasting legacy of the Jarretts on the wrestling business?
Boy, that's a deep one. I'm going to guess that my mantra, and I talk to every wrestler that ever wrestled in Memphis, or in Tennessee for that matter. And I would tell them, we don't have many rules here, but one rule is to keep it real. Don't do anything in the ring that you're thinking, boy, they won't believe this shit. Excuse me. So I think maybe people remember that as wild as Memphis was, as crazy gimmicks as we had, as far-fetched as some of the stipulations were, I think they will say, boy, when I went to the matches, I believed. They kept it real. I mean, you know, there are some things that I consider second to that. I think my daughter being addicted to MTV and me seeing that brought about the wrestling videos. And I think that, as much as anything, was responsible for the resurgence of wrestling during what we call the glory years. So, you know, I'm proud of the wrestling videos that we started, but most I'm proud that we kept it real.
If you want to enjoy some of that classic Memphis or Portland, you know, and a variety of other awesome old school wrestling, Jarrett Parsons TV Wrestling on Roku. All you got to do is type in that channel, even go online, go to the Roku, and you can add the channel from online, stream some of the great wrestling. Please just give us one last plug, if you will, for Jarrett Parsons TV Wrestling.
Well, I hope that we can continue what I've done since 1967, and that's bring a little entertainment into your life.
It is some great stuff, and also I have to mention the podcast as well, Booking Memphis Wrestling. You still got going on. Hot Avenue is where you can get that. Is that something you definitely love doing? Do you love doing the podcast?
Yeah, I enjoy it because, for me, I've got a great co-host in Sean Reedy. And I just, you know, for me, it's just walk down memory lane once a week for an hour.
That is some great stuff. And like I said, go to Pod Avenue and check out Booking Memphis Wrestling with Jerry Jarrett. And, of course, one last time I'll mention it, go to Roku, go to Jarrett Parsons TV Wrestling and get some old school wrestling. I know I may watch some Memphis wrestling tonight, now that you mentioned that Austin Idol versus Jerry Lawler is on there. I may watch some Memphis wrestling tonight.
Good, good. And let me tell you, I really have enjoyed being on. And I wish you all the luck in the world. And if you think your fans can tolerate another interview, call me anytime.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.